one. And then we have this one. So, good evening, good afternoon to Ita Roussos. Did I say it? Roussos. With whom I'm speaking on Tuesday, June the 9th. Ita is in South Africa, and I sit here in Albany, Hudson River Valley, New York. And Ita, this star-shaped prototyping process I like to describe first, and then we'll gather our collective energy, and then with your embodied practice in your heart and soul, we'll begin the questions, okay?
Great.
So this five-pointed star prototyping model derives from the research at the MIT Presencing Institute, and it's based upon the quality of our attention and energy, with the first point being how, as we learn to listen to our feelings as a way to invite the emerging future, that we continuously listen to the universe with whatever practices we've cultivated, and that the universe is a helpful place. And that as we create together with others, aligning and engaging the intelligences of the head, the heart, and the will, action center, that the crystallizing of a vision and intention begins to land, embodiment practice. And that as that happens in an individual, there's something that wants to be shared. And so a core team of others begins to assemble, come around, and that then places and spaces where experiments can happen. We call them landing strips of the future. So that where it's safe to experiment. And as we make the mistakes and learn together, there's this generative field of feedback that begins to be part and parcel of our conscious iterating of learning by doing. And so then that's the circular. We listen again, we crystallize our intention. And these are all created through the movements of the you practice, the you theory, which is about sensing and co-sensing, connecting to source, asking the questions of who am I, who are we, what is our work. And then as things get let go of, there's space for the new to emerge. And then we try by doing this crystallizing or realizing something that might call us forward. So thank you for listening to that bit of kind of info. And now just to get into the body and in the ways that you know how, Ita, I'll share some words and then I'll invite you to bring some language into our shared space as well, if you would like. So this landing and locating with the breath and body and the life force, enabling us to be in our spots on the big planet Earth, the big body Earth, and then also begin to share this field, this generative field, the social body that begins to expand capacity on the planet now. And then remembering in the ways that you know how this story of your practice of moving from me to we, in whatever way it sings itself through today. Landing behind the heart, perhaps. Feeling the earth. the space and time. And then as you're so moved to offer up some words for us and for the readers, if you wish.
Yeah. It always feels to me like such a heart space. The way in which I bring in the energy, it's always made sense to me to say from the hands and heart of Source to my hands and heart. Because it's such a real way in which we express ourselves with our hands. As we do with our hands, and we feel each other through the heart space. So my practice is very much about we, even in this time of isolation, we're still in lockdown. I practice in the early mornings with a group in Europe, different places in Europe. I practice with my community here, and we transcend the physical distance through the heart space. So for me, it feels very, very important and very relevant to locate within the heart space and then to feel the navel, you know, the belly and the will, and to feel how that connects with our hands and how we translate that. And we manifest. You called it crystallizing. We manifest out in the world through that crystallization of the self. And what comes out of that when it's totally open and spacious is totally out of our control, but is very magical. So I love how we're embodying that space together right now. We're actually creating something magical right now.
Thank you. Thank you. So with this initiation and invocation in us, around us, and between us, may this first question that really continues this quality of arising energy to remember back in your thoughts, in your feelings, in your sensing, in your hands, what they touched. Where did your inspiration come from relative to this field of yoga, or mind-body integration, however you name it?
I grew up in a very, very small, very conservative little town out in what was called in the days of apartheid, the Northern Transvaal. And we lived in a very conservative Afrikaans little town. And in those days, the church dominated the whole town and its people, which was very separate. White people lived in the little village. Black people lived completely separate outside of the village and served as the labor pool. So my first exposure to yoga was a woman called Jewel, who I knew for 6 months and who disappeared, and I've never ever seen her again. And I was 12. But she was so inspiring to me that her influence lasted for the rest of my life. She left after 6 months because the church excommunicated or threatened to excommunicate the people who were attending her classes, all women. So they all stopped going to her classes, and there were about six of us left. My mother, who took me, was one of them. And Jewel eventually left after 6 months. She left because she couldn't make a living. But her influence lasted forever. It's lived on in me, and it's now lived on in all the many, many people whose lives I've touched. So that was my first inspiration. And I started working as a yoga teacher at the age of 20 because I'd been practicing on my own. And right from that time, South Africa, along with the rest of Africa, the we is a very present concept if we allow it to be here. So it was always about the we for me. And all of the philosophy that I studied on my own at the time was also about service. It was service oriented. So I started teaching as an activist. I was teaching activists who were fairly burnt out and who were suffering from PTSD, really, because of being arrested and tortured and in hiding and on the run. And I was so enamored with how healthy and alive and vital yoga kept me that I made it a commitment to teach activists how to do self-care. And that's really where it stopped.
Thank you. So we're talking 3 or 4 decades ago? How many years? What years are we talking about?
We're talking in the late 70s and early 80s.
Right. Okay. Just to put it in historic context for readers.
Yes.
So as
that was very much a very, very, it was very much in the middle of the worst times of apartheid.
Right. Thank you. So as this clarification of your offer into the world, this service, this capacity that was building in your nature and your willingness to serve, could you please help us understand better how it began to refine and as you were initiating from your own desires, how did others join you in a co-initiatory practice or process? How did you get that help and begin again in your learning journey?
It took a long time. It took decades, actually. And one of the reasons was the work, the yoga world in South Africa is very white. And the people that I was working with were not white. So it was always seen as a practice that belongs only to white people. And it was a long time, it took me a long time to gather enough energy in the work that, in my own personal practice, and in the work that I was doing, for people to trust me that, one, it wasn't a religion, I wasn't trying to take them away from their religion. Two, there was nothing about race that stopped them from being able to access such an important tool and technology. And those two together, while I was teaching people of my generation, I couldn't break through. It just wasn't happening for decades. Even though I was doing a lot of work, I was working with people who were HIV positive, I was working with refugees, I was working with many different groups of people. This was now after independence in the 90s. And it just wasn't happening. And then in the 2000s, around about 2005, I began working with young people, much younger than me. And that took about 10 years for it to really catch on and for the youth to become old enough to have been exposed to an international, like through the internet, you know, social media, for them to begin to understand that, hang on, there really is something here about yoga. There's something, there's got to be something. And something more than what we've been told. And there's got to be something more than what we've been taught about spirituality. Because many people here were locked into the Christian mindset and were raised as Christians. And in fact, the African spirituality, which is incredibly close to the yogic spirituality, was quite oppressed and very much colonized. So it was around 2015 that I gathered a group of young people up to their mid-30s, starting from late teens, who were really keen to be able to work with me and to be trained by me. And it became very clear during the time that I wasn't reaching people that I had to train others because there was no ways I could reach. My reach was just too small, and obviously I'm one person. So in 2015, I gathered a group of people. We started an organization called Kundalini Africa Rising, and I began training teachers of color. Up to that point, there were no teachers of color teaching in the field that I teach in, which is Kundalini Yoga. And then I developed a form in the intervening years before I started Kundalini Africa Rising. I developed a form called African Kundalini Yoga, which combines the two philosophies as much as they do overlap. I use both systems, or at least the philosophies underlying both systems. I don't use the practices because I've developed different ways of working. but it's become a very popular form in a small, tiny little way, but it has become a popular form for those reasons, because it appeals to the African understanding of spirituality, and it combines the incredible physical and mental practices that come out of India that we all know about. And yeah, that's really how I moved from the individual doing the work to training others so that they can take over. As you said, who are we handing the baton to? Because we're moving, you know, to the ends of our careers.
Right. So as I'm listening to you, I'm seeing a series of circles fan out behind you. And what I'm curious about, relative to having listened to the land and the culture from the land, as well as listening to the body and the precepts as they move through our bodies in the yoga-based tradition, can you please help us understand a little more about those similarities and differences as you created your new form?
So when I say a new form, it is an amalgamation of two very, very ancient indigenous knowledge systems. So I haven't really created anything. All I've done is I've drawn, you know, different philosophies and practices and put them into a form, which is extraordinarily effective, especially here in Africa. For the reason that, and you talk about circles, overlapping circles, I recognize the ancestors as a very, very important part of who we are. That comes from my own tradition, where the ancestors in my culture are incredibly important. We keep them with us all the time. We refer to them all the time as if they're still alive. We speak to them, we ask for guidance. And so that has been a natural point of connection with the African healing system, which sees us as being part of a far larger system, which spans different parallel realms and dimensions of being, of reality. So that is the one system. The other system you mentioned, the earth and the land, I call it the earth because land has connotations of colonization, and so it's the earth bodies, the mountains, the rivers, the trees that form our base chakra, that inform us all the time, that as long as we're incorporating that expanded presence that we can, we're then really accessing those systems of wisdom inside of our own bodies, because there's no difference. In the teachings in Africa, you can't separate yourself from the earth bodies. You're not separate. And in yoga, it's the same thing. We're made up of these elements. We're made up of the same elements that are found everywhere else. So the practice is really being able to incorporate that into every moment, into every thought, into every relationship that we have with each other, so that we're never just operating from that finite self, from the ego self. We're always coming with these massive systems of energy that we're part of together, and we enter that oneness together. That teaching, that practice, when we're on the mat and we're doing certain breath practices or certain asana, we are required to bring these other systems in, because otherwise we're lobotomizing the practice in a certain way. So it's the same principle in Africa. You can't meet a person and not see their entire lineage and their connection to the earth. Because if you don't do that, you're not living the principle of I'm a person because of you. I'm a person through you. There is no separation between us. If you had a bad night sleeping last night, I'm with you. I feel that. I can't be happy if you're not happy. That's the principle of Ubuntu. And that is what is so powerful here on the African continent, still on this continent. Even though there's been so much colonization and so much abuse of Africa, and of the people here is still such a powerful underlying community aspect to absolutely everything. And community includes the earth.
Thank you. So as I enter the space of the shared spirituality on the land and the principle and practice of the Ubuntu, I'm curious, as I'm sure others will be, about the differences between the tribes in Africa, similar to the differences between the lineages in yoga, and whether or not you'd like to comment on that, how you met the integration capacity that you seem to be embodying when conflict or confusion arose, as people were learning to let go, you know, of these particular singular ways of understanding.
I can't say that is, it's a very much a part of our reality, as it is a very much part of the reality of every human living. That tribal mentality, you know, that's what nations are made up of, what borders are made, it's all based on that nationalism, that tribal mentality, and people feeling more comfortable amongst their own. That still happens here. We have something called xenophobia, where different countries from Africa, people come here to seek work and to seek asylum and safety. They get, you know, we have xenophobic riots where people start attacking foreigners because they're taking jobs. They're perhaps working for less money than local South Africans. They're not unionized. They're more easily abused, so people will hire them. So there is that's going on. There's all of the surface stuff that's going on in the rest of the world. You know, all the factionalism, the tribalism, the politicking, all the isms that exist, racism, sexism, you know, genderism, all of the stuff that exists everywhere else is here too. It's a complete reality. There is no real difference. What makes the difference here is that people have never forgotten the understanding of lineage and community. It is very real. The family unit is huge. Extended family unit and then the clan. While that can extend to factionalism and tribalism, it is also the basis for people coming back to a way of being, which is honoring of the old ways, especially the youth. The youth are amazing. They're incredibly open to many different ways of doing things, but extraordinarily respectful of the ways, the traditional ways of Africa, which the rest of the world can really learn something from. You know, really, they're very powerful ways of being in community that are very carefully structured. They still exist the same way as they've existed for millions, I don't know how long, lots and lots of time. So those sorts of rules and understanding of relationship and kinship and family and how to behave in certain ways are still very much practiced here and respected. If you dig just under the surface of Christianity, you will find the African spirituality. It's never gone away. It's always been there.
Thank you. So as we land a little bit more deeply into the root here around how moving toward the young ones who clearly, from what I am listening into, have been expressing a hunger for this return to some rootedness from the land, from the body, from the shared space of practice. And I'm continuing to wonder the learnings that you have had from the collective as they gathered in practice together, and what began to lift up from the collective, this under the surface scratch place that you referred to. What treasures, as everyone began to practice together, began to become clearer. We came to emerge.
As clear as mud, as they say. But so many, so many things have emerged. And I think one of the most profound is what we call a group consciousness. An understanding of how powerful it is to be a community that inspires and transforms other communities. So it's not an individual working within a community. It's a community of yogis. We have a mantra or a mission statement that we developed together. And it started off being the radical integration of social justice and spiritual practice.
Mm-hmm.
And we now have shortened it and we say social justice is a spiritual practice. And that is really what we use to inform everything that we do. As a community, we come together using the practice for the purpose of social justice. Not only, although that's a byproduct for personal enlightenment, but for the enlightenment of all. There's a Buddhist saying, the Bodhisattva said, not until the last blade of grass is liberated will I take my liberation. And that is the motivation that inspires us, that we're not doing this for ourselves. We're doing this in order to uplift each other and create a one-mindedness in the community, within the group consciousness, which then has the impact to uplift so much more than one-mindedness in one person. So that's our motivation, and that has been clarifying itself. And as I say, as clear as mud, because so many fights and so many disagreements and so much politics and blah, blah, blah. We remain human. But at the same time, underneath all of that surface stuff that humans, you know, negative mind gets involved in, beneath all of that is this burgeoning understanding of what we call neutral mind. That mind that is able to transcend, or that we're able to use to transcend the factionalism and approach that place of pure consciousness, a place that we can use that consciousness and pass it on like a torch, you know, that you pass on to other people. I think that's been exceptionally profound. That quite remarkably, people look around and go, wow, we're still around. 5 years later, we're still around. We fight, we do, you know, whatever we do, and we disagree and we do different stuff, but we're in the trenches together and we inspire each other and we attract more and more and more people. And one by one, with the difficulties that we have here, training people it's a phenomenal issue. There are no resources, financial resources. There is a massive backlog in terms of education, the education system of many of working class kids. We have to literally take the exams, whatever exams we give, and break it down piece by piece so that we can make it manageable for people to be able to produce what this Western system sees as important. So magnificent teachers coming out who can't really write an exam, but who can transmit this passion, this integrity, this desire for others to heal, and for, you know, for ourselves to heal through the healing of others. I think those are the gems. It's been extraordinary watching young working class kids and middle class, we've got all sorts of people coming for the training, being so inspiring that people from all over the world want to come and train here because they want to be amongst this kind of energy, this kind of community-minded saver energy, and the purity of that integrity that comes from here. And I've traveled in a lot of different countries. When an African person smiles at you and gives you that heart smile, your heart immediately opens. It's a phenomenal capacity to be open heart, the capacity to forgive. I haven't seen it anywhere else. So when you bring all of that together, even with the anger and the rage and the there's a lot of that, especially amongst the youth, but that capacity to operate with integrity and to understand integrity when they are met with integrity, is very powerful.
Thank you. So as I sit here and listen, I'm really imagining this rooted quality of inspiration must have some teaching stories or some other texts or transmissions that the readers might like to know about by way of illustration. And the idea here is that somehow something is attracting, right? That there's this initial divine spark of this continuous nature of abandoning ourselves to divine spirituality, and the earth-centered quality in which you very explicitly name this blending of the pathways occurs to me as an education beyond imagination. And the reason I'm saying that is that if it's true now, Ita, that our planetary body, the earth body, is wanting more of what you've already been able to scratch and listen into, I just get curious about the other ones who are waiting to enter, you know, who are still in the forest covered over and who may want to come into the field and practice with you. Could you tell a little bit about the how people find you? What's in the wind? What's in the ethos that begins to find its way into people's hearts, minds, and then their bodies so that they come?
Yeah. There's a lot happening in the world on a social justice level. We have many, many organizations that are working towards social justice, which is, you know, obviously very powerful. And I'm just going to backtrack a little bit to answer your question, that the thing I started off with, which was working with activists and ensuring that that very special type of energy that an activist has, which is it's a firebrand of energy that can sometimes burn so hot, and it happens here a lot, especially in Africa, and so bright that it burns out very quickly. It's like the fire rages out of control and then becomes ashes. And people turn to addiction, become despairing and develop mental health problems. And that's happened with my generation of activists. The largest proportion of those activists have burned out. But when you bring spirituality into it and you combine that fire with the capacity to burn strong, steady, and much longer than anybody else, that you have the staying power and you have the capacity to keep going, pushing the same message with a sheer determination that comes straight from source. That capacity for me is what I have dedicated my life to. My understanding is that we're many, many beings and one source, one energy that speaks. It's not me speaking. I am downloading and you are downloading, and we're downloading from the same place. So we're working all together as mouthpieces of spirit. And we have all these amazing reflections, but they're all spirit. So for me, there is no other. Mm. However, at the same time, as that's the meta understanding, on the ground, we are faced with polarity, and we do need to understand how to land on the side, the right side, to say, I will not come at you in a way that is out of control and reacting, but I will act. I will create an action that will generate an energy that will pick up on other people's actions and begin to, you know, the pool with the stone and all the ripples that keep growing, that image helps me also to understand how we're here as Kaa Kundalini Africa Rising. We're a lighthouse, and we're shining that light out. And then there are these beautiful other lighthouses. Black Lives Matter is one, another one. You know, we've got partnerships with different organizations who are working towards the same ends, and we hold hands across the world. And that way, it's not just people coming to me or to my organization. It's just generating this incredible magnetic pulse that is drawing people into its orbit. The scriptures teach us that we will be 960 million. There will 960 million we will be. And we will turn the tide. We only need to be 960 million. That's not a lot of people when you think of the billions on the planet, but it's enough. When those 960 million are generating this magnetic pulse together, that will swing the psyche of the billions of people on the planet. Only 7%. That's what we're told. 7% of a flock of birds know which direction they're flying in. So my dedication is to build that 7% and to work with as many other people as possible in whatever way, whatever mouthpiece you have, Spirit is talking through you. And I will work with that in order to magnify that voice that's coming through you and me and everybody else. Because I know that that magnetic pulse is building and that it's generating the capacity to swing our consciousness as a species, because that's what we need to do.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. So let's just pause there and receive this capacity of opening toward a new time. And so in this moment, Ita, on the planet, of course, this need is even greater. These last 10 days or so, everywhere, this awareness about the inequities, however you want to name it. And please let our readers know the impact relative to your devotion to this messaging and what has changed over these last couple of weeks, if anything at all, since all of this new turbulence because of some untoward incidents in this country, this U.S. And it may not make any difference to you. Yes. Go ahead.
Sorry, I didn't catch that last bit.
I said it may not make any difference to you. I just thought it would be a moment in time to mark.
It makes a huge difference to us. You know, we are an organization that promotes action. So we do protest marches. We're yogis, so we do them in a way where we're chanting. We're sitting in meditation, but we've got the placards and we've got the signage, and we very clearly are standing for a particular way of being in the world. So Black Lives Matter is an incredibly important concept for us. And to see the U.S. rising and creating conscious awareness of what a scourge that type of racism is, what a scourge it is to racialize people at all, that's just a false category that makes people into economic objects that can be exploited. And that's what we stand for. We stand for a conscious awareness that we will do everything. Like we're still in lockdown here, but we're planning a silent protest march. We'll stand 2 meters apart. We'll have masks on, but we will stand outside the U.S. Embassy on June 16th, which is Youth Day. South Africa, very important day in the history of South Africa, where the youth rose up in 1976 and burnt down all their schools and said, we will not take your education one more day. So we're marking that day on June 16th by standing in support of Black Lives Matter US, but also Black Lives Matter South Africa, because ironically, a black life is far cheaper than a white life in South Africa. So we're standing in protest against that. That if a black person is killed here, 2 months later we're sitting trying to figure out why a person was killed by the army during lockdown, a person who lived in the township called Alex. 2 months later, we still don't know, we have no answers, we have no action. 4 days later, the people in the US were arrested and something was done. So, you know, we want to draw attention to that. Black lives matter. They're not less important than anybody else's life. So yes, that's very, we're passionate about creating a yogic awareness that it is fine to stand on a side as long as we are utilizing all the tools so that we remain powerful, consistent, and enduring, that we will outlive and outlast any other movements. And that, I think, is what is so powerful about creating that mix between social justice and a spiritual practice. I don't think it's new, obviously, but it is something where if we bring yoga into it, creates a very powerful impact.
And that actually is the very next piece here, which is, if the substance that is now being seen, felt, and sensed, and I can't help but thinking of Jewel and her impact on you, and how that thread of consciousness has taken form through your work, and that the ways in which your capacity to honor the narrow dharma of whatever it was that you received and continued to weave and cultivate, that quality of energy that you spoke to, this has a not only symbolic capacity in the poetic description through the philosophy and the embodied practice, but more importantly, this stake in the ground that we are standing as something that matters, right? That this number that you name, that, you know, the generational flow that makes that 7%, you know, my Native American friends, it's the seventh fire, or, you know, whatever these scales of hospitable harmonies are now coming into view for so many of us on the planet, that your form and the place in which you choose to lift it up for the world to see, I guess, and to feel, engages more hands. So going back to this way in which the moving from the heart through the hands and holding hands across the planet, if it's true, Ita, that the scales are shifting, right, in this time that we are speaking and we sense into it together, and that this divine justice through the spiritual and social renewals that we're being invited to live into are actually now standing up behind us too, then I would love to hear, for the sake of the early practitioners who will be reading, how to stay with it. How have you developed this staying with quality?
I have to say, it's my daily practice. So it's without my daily practice, my internal reality would have been much narrower. I would not have been able to contain as much as I do. And obviously I can contain much more, but this is my karma, this is my destiny, and this is who I am and what I am containing. The focus that I'm able to hold and the intuition that I'm able to harness, that bringing those two together has created a very powerful daily practice. So I get up very, very early in the morning, way before the sun rises. I get into a freezing cold shower every day in order to shock my system into, right, we're in it, we're online, here we are, we're ready, what have you got for me? And that immersion into a 2.5 hour to 3 hour daily practice where I work my body and I bring my mind into a state of stillness in order to kickstart my heart. And then it's been a little more difficult now with the lockdown because I don't have the capacity to reach people physically, but we have technology and we're very blessed, so we can't complain. But normally, you know, that presence, my deep understanding, one of the most powerful spiritual teachings that I've managed to embody is, if your presence doesn't work for you, then no matter how many words you use, you're not going to get through. So building that presence and creating that magnetism in my being, which is calibrated exactly the way my soul has decided it needs to be calibrated. I don't even know. I have, honestly, truly, most of my life, I've been totally clueless about what the future holds. It's just, let me put myself in place and gear myself up to hold the energy of the moment, and it will take me where I need to be. And it's always worked. It's always created, even Jewel, and, you know, being exposed to this phenomenal human being who I thought came from another planet. She was just so beautiful and extraordinary for a little girl. And then to realize this is something, when I did my first yoga class with her, I remember this. This is not new. This is something I've done before. And then that understanding, gathering and galloping, leaps and bounds, creating this container within me, that it's now my job to be that for other people. And the more well-kept my container is, the more polished and you know, maintained, well-maintained it is, the more it translates. I don't have to speak. I just live my life, and then the energy gathers and brings people to me who consistently say to me, and it continues to gobsmack me, what can I do to serve? Wow. Seriously, I'm not alone anymore? That's incredible. You know, because I've been carrying this torch for decades on my own. And now suddenly, the past 5 years, Spirit has gone, here you are, here's your army. I don't know if I've answered your question, Ali. I'm sorry. I got a bit off track.
Oh, no. It was right on. It was totally on. So much star energy coming through you now. Just receive the chance to shine it out. It's so beautiful. Thank you so much. So it's the treasures, right, are so immense. And when the heart's desire finally gets unleashed, I mean, there's so much scripture on this, and that we blend together with the oversoul, with, there's so much that's just shining in. I mean, talk about the sunspots and the resonance and all of these wobbles from the Mayans. I was teaching in Jamaica, and I go every year, and there was a guy, and he came to me after we were doing a sunset, and he said, you know, Allie, they never really got it. This 2012 thing was a big deal. and
what?
Right? And so if we track back and begin to feel, see, and sense some of these milestones that the traditions have already named, you spoke about it relative to the 7%, that as we learn, and maybe this is the cup now beginning to run over sufficiently so that this energetic field begins to inform our planetary development, and that those young ones who are coming toward you, how IAYT and you found each other, and these kind of magical and mysterious ways that we tell each other the stories now in this self-sheltering, it appears to me, and I'm going back to your original spark about the activists' need for spiritual justice so they wouldn't burn out. And so just a few more comments as we wind down around some of the magic that you're touching into as you look into the future, Ita. If you could peek around the corner into the future, what are some of the young ones going to say?
The young ones are begging me to train them in yoga therapy because I'm training them as yoga teachers, and I'm very careful with the therapy portion because it really has taken me a very long time to collect all the necessary skill set in order to ensure that the work that I do with people is ethical and responsible. So I'm very careful with the way in which I train. So I need to build in a solid, committed saviors. You know, I need people who are prepared to go the distance, activists essentially, who are trained and disciplined in yogic philosophy and combine that shamanic element, which is the African spirituality. Bring it in, while yoga is also shamanic, but just bring those two together to create this incredible capacity to stay ethically true to the, to, in other words, stay away from the profit motive, because it corrupts healers. So training my people on this, which is hard, you know, it's hard for a community of people who've been kept away from so much to now be told, okay, but now you have to, you know, come into it, and don't go into it for yourself. Don't come in to be the star yoga teacher. That's not what we're about here. We're about serious, true, ethical behavior. Anyway, long story short, the youth are really wanting to be trained as therapists. The reason why I went into training in the first place was to promote the understanding in our national health system, in fact, in the African public health system, of how important it is to bring yoga therapy into public health clinics. So I've just finished a study on PTSD, pregnancy, and yoga therapy. Now, this is something which is, I had to fund it myself, so I had to do a very small number of people, but it has had a profound effect on the people who did the yoga therapy, because we have a very high incidence of PTSD here. The stories are horrific of what women endure in this part of the world. So taking them through a yoga therapy program, the aim is to be able to document and to show that we need a huge study, a 5-year-long huge study in 2 or 3 public health clinics over, you know, the different regions in South Africa. And then on the basis of that, to get yoga therapy into public health clinics. So we have 2 therapists working in every public health clinic, because we have no screening for mental health virtually across the public health system. We have no screening for pregnant women, and very little screening for people in general for mental health. And yoga, it's one of my major areas, is anxiety, depression, and trauma. It is super powerful in terms of bringing people back into their bodies and healing on that very base chakra level of, I'm safe, yeah. So that's my view of the future, is research, bringing science into it, and really having that documented proof that we can open universities that do this training in this, on this continent, because it will take off like wildfire if it is given the proper backing and support that it needs. And the youth are backing me on this. They're very excited.
So I have a vision as you speak of the many new trees that are rooting on the continent of Africa, and that as those years and years of dismay may find the new rains of this freshness of your approach that is so honors what has come before, as well as bringing in these very practical sets of practices from the other continent. And what an inspiration it has been to speak with you. And if there are any last words for our readers, any further reflections from your body, from your heart, from your hands, just let's see if there's anything else.
My education from a very, very young person has been each one, teach one. Take what you know and pass it on. And that has created a very powerful impact in our communities here from forever. Just what you know, share. It's the birthright of every person to have access to their own healing and to be able to heal themselves in every way. And if you know anything about that, find someone and teach them.
May your story inspire others. I look forward to hearing more about your projects and passing people on to you if you're welcoming that. And
very much so.
Okay, great. So blessed evening to you. May your nature be guided. And such a pleasure. We're looking for a 2021 launch of all of this. So I'm sure I'll be back in touch as things get more detailed.
Wonderful. And thank you for doing this work. Thank you for bringing us together and putting us out there. It's extraordinary work to be that kind of weaver. It's amazing. Thank you.
It's my honor. Take good care.
Thank you, Ellie.
Bye-bye. Mm.